shall we? Acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spotless, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 29, Spice It Up, Friday, March 7th, 2014. I'm your host, Sarah, podcasting from Yinhu Chaoyuan, Silver Lake Tea House. Today's episode features the following segments: the back porch, the front porch, gratitude journal, and double happiness. It's been 2 weeks since I recorded episode 29, and in the past 2 weeks, I've heard from quite a few listeners. Thank you for saying hi to Marge Fitz from Boston, Moonbow 9, Halsey Yarn, who is Chris of the U University podcast, Fernanda M, Allison, who is Sticks and Spokes from Scotland, and Swenstia left a review on iTunes. I also heard from a few people who left comments on the show blog. Thank you to Andy, Cassidy, and Maggie's Corner, who left comments with two questions. Maggie wanted to know about the lyrics for the show's theme song, and they are posted on the show blog this week. I've added a link to the Bovine Social Club website, and Samuel, my partner and the co-inhabitant of Yin Hu, wrote the lyrics. His band, Bovine Social Club, also performs that song, but the recording that I use is an older one that he recorded with two other folks that I mention at the end of each show. Maggie's Corner also wanted to know, where is episode 8? Which sent me on a little hunt. Episode 8 is available, like all of the other episodes, on iTunes and on the show's website, because I recorded 6 podcasts in October. When you're on the October part of the archives, you actually have to click back to older posts at the bottom of the page to see episode 8. But it is there with show notes, and you can also listen to that episode on the show's website, Yarns at Yin Hu. Each week when I record a podcast, it is fed to iTunes, of course, but it's also available on the website, and there are links to most of the things that I talk about. You can also find me on Ravelry, Twitter, and Instagram as Sarah Pomegranate. Thanks, everyone, for reaching out to me and leaving comments and messages. I really enjoy the feedback and the interaction. A lot has happened since the last episode, so let's jump right in. In the last episode, I mentioned that I had begun a sweater pattern, my first knitted sweater, a pattern called Apocalypta by Amy Herzog. It's found in the Knitting It Old School book, which I purchased on Amazon because the pattern was not available through Ravelry. I am happy to report that I did complete the sweater by the end of February. It was quite a rush to the finish, but I was able to complete it, steam block it, and wear it for a very nice evening out on Friday the 28th. And I posted my photographs to a number of different knit-alongs that I was following. I'm very pleased with the outcome. The sweater is by no means perfect, but it does fit extremely well. And I really love the details of the sweater, the drop stitches around the neckline and on the inside of the sleeve and along each side of the body. I knit this on US size 7 needles using Shibui, 2 strands held together for the entire knitting process. And the 2 types of Shibui yarn that I used are Silk Cloud, which is a silk mohair blend, and Sima, which is an alpaca and wool blend. I used almost all of the three hanks that I had of each of those in the mineral colorway. There are a couple of things that I found challenging. One was using very different yarn than was called for by the pattern. So I talked last episode about doing a gauge swatch and making some careful calculations and decisions about the needle size that I would use. Also, I found it challenging to knit two sleeves of exactly the same length, and I believe the left sleeve is a little bit longer than the right sleeve. The most challenging thing was sewing in the sleeves, and I would like in the future to watch a few tutorials or maybe take a class involved in seaming your knits and learning how to create very clean lines and seams without puckering or bunching or visible stitches. Luckily, the fuzziness of the mohair means that my imperfect seaming is not too noticeable, and it didn't develop any holes in the times I've worn it since. So I think I did a secure job, but it's not an incredibly beautiful job. I would knit this sweater again, but now that I have knit my first sweater, I'm really interested in looking at other patterns and other yarn combinations to try out something new. I have never felt as though I wasn't a real knitter. I think knowing how to knit and purl and being able to follow a pattern with some degree of self-direction and not a lot of oversight makes anyone a knitter, a real knitter. But I do feel a special sense of accomplishment having completed my first sweater. Once again, that's Apocalypta, a sweater designed by Amy Herzog, and it's found in the collection Knitting It Old School. Since completing this sweater pattern, I have begun a new thread on Ravelry, which is a contest to win the Knitting It Old School book. This is a book of 43 different patterns inspired by designs of the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. Most of the things are garments, but there are some other retro accessories and things like that. If you're interested in winning the Knitting It Old School collection, go on over to the Yarns at Yinhu group on Ravelry, look for the contest thread, and post a comment about your favorite book or collection of patterns. It could be something you own. It could be something you would like very much to own. I will select a winner randomly, and I'll send that book out to you. So if you're interested, go take a look. After completing the sweater, I began a new pattern for a scarf called Luna 2 by Riko Kuamura. This is a pattern available on Ravelry, and there are a variety of color combinations possible. The pattern design is really awesome and very thorough. One of the things that Riko Kuamura includes at the beginning of the pattern is a series of charts that you can color in with colored pencils to design the kind of scarf you want. You could use two colors, three colors, four colors, and then you follow the directions accordingly. I have chosen Frog Tree Alpaca in the sport weight, which is 100% alpaca yarn. It's really soft and lovely. And I've chosen black, ivory, and red. So it should be a pretty interesting color combination. It's worked in German short rows using the double stitch, which has become my favorite. I really like that for shaping. And it's an interesting construction because the entire scarf is knit in garter stitch, but sometimes the patterning uses the right side of garter stitch, and sometimes the patterning features the wrong side of garter stitch. I'm only at the beginning stages of the scarf, but I'm having a lot of fun with Luna 2. And I'm knitting that on US size 3 straight bamboo needles. Right now, Luna 2 is on hold because I'm participating in Sock Madness for the second year. If you've never heard of Sock Madness, it is a knitting contest, a sock knitting contest in its 8th year. And I was introduced to it by Zemi, who is a member of the knitting group at my local yarn store, Mountain Knits and Purls. She is one of the moderators and hosts of the Sock Madness contest. She encouraged me to try it last year, and I did, and I nearly completed round one. There are 7 or 8 rounds altogether. It was nearly midnight of the last night of round one last year. I was about to head out on an overnight field trip. I probably had another hour and a half of knitting to go to finish my pair of socks, and I couldn't do it. I needed to pack, I needed to have my wits about me for the next day, and I just couldn't complete it by the deadline. I did complete the socks, they came out very well. They were a Christmas gift for my mom this year. She really likes them and wears them all the time. But this year, when Sock Madness rolled around, my objective is to complete round one this year. So it's begun. The contest has actually gotten off the ground a little bit earlier in March this year than last year, I believe. And round one is a pattern called Brucey by Amy Rapp. And Brucey is a reference to Bruce in Finding Nemo. There are a number of nautical pattern portions in the sock and a lot of allusions to the film in the pattern itself. It's a lot of fun to knit. So far, I felt appropriately challenged. It's difficult, but I feel like I can do it. And I feel like I have a chance at completing before the deadline. Last year, I decided to knit socks 2 at a time on one long circular. And in knitting socks 2 at a time, I spent a lot of time unraveling and untangling yarn. I'm not a very experienced sock knitter, and so it was difficult for me to keep things straight. I was very concerned about being able to complete the pattern twice and making mistakes or fixing them on a second sock. So that seemed to me a great idea at the time, to knit them 2 at once. But this year I'm knitting them 1 at a time. So far it's going quite well. I really like the yarn that I've selected, Zytron Trekking XXL. I'm using US size 1 circular needles, which are a little smaller than the pattern called for, but my knitting in the round is pretty loose, I have to say. So I think that's a good choice for me. It's a lot of fun knitting these socks with about 500 other people. So the Sock Madness board is ablaze with comments and photographs, and it is a great way to knit socks if you're a beginner, because you can see the progress of people all around the world with a lot of different kinds of yarn, a lot of different knitting techniques. Some people are knitting them 2 at a time. Some people are knitting them in tandem. Some people are already done, even though the pattern came out on Monday morning, I think. So lots of different levels of ability. And it's helpful for a beginner because you can see what that part is about to look like on a lot of other people's socks before you begin it yourself. It's very helpful. And the momentum and the energy of everyone participating and talking about them on Ravelry is also very energizing. A little overwhelming, but very energizing. So once again, that is the Brucey sock pattern by Amy Rapp. I believe at this time it is only available to people who are competing in Sock Madness Year 8. I'm not sure if that will be available later on, but if it is, I encourage you to try it because it's a really fun pattern. And I'll keep you posted regarding whether or not I complete round one with the finished pair of socks and have the opportunity to move on to round two. And that's when you're actually put on a team. Gratitude Journal. I'm very excited this week to share a news item that appeared in the Daily Record, which is a local paper to me in Morris County, New Jersey. This was given to me by a colleague who said, "Oh, I saw this and I thought of you. It was in today's paper." It's an article titled "Knitting Kindness." It appeared in the Daily Record on Monday, March 3rd. And immediately the title of the article brought to mind Paula of the Knitting Pipeline and her term "a kindness of knitters" as a collective noun for a group of knitters. And that's exactly what these folks in Morristown are doing. There's a group of people who are not named in the article. They are known as the Morristown Fiber Fairy. So together they call themselves the Morristown Fiber Fairy. All winter in the cold weather, they have been knitting hats and scarves and potentially other accessories as well. And they've been putting them on some of the statues that are in the Morristown Green. There are a couple of different statues there. A notable one is the Seeing Eye statue. And this is a statue of the Seeing Eye Foundation's founder, Morris Frank, and the dog Buddy. So together they have a statue. It's right on the green and right outside a department store in downtown Morristown. And the Morristown Fiber Fairies have been putting hats and scarves on both Morris Frank and Buddy the dog. And each knitted or crocheted garment has a little tag on it that says, "If you need this to help keep you warm in the cold weather, then it is now yours. Life is good. Pass it on." In the article, the Morristown Fiber Fairy reports that they were inspired by a group in Ottawa, Canada, who was doing something similar. And they take their job very seriously. In the photograph, and I guess whenever they go out to put the hats and the scarves on the statues, they are all wrapped up so you can't tell who they are. They're incognito. And they take care of everything. So if it rains or if it snows or if the things get dirty, they take them off, they take them back to their homes, wash them, dry them, put new tags back on, and set the caps back on the statues. And this caught the attention of some local people who gave a tip to the paper that it could be a great story idea. And what the group reported noticing is that sometimes when they went around to put the hats and scarves out, there were already other hats and scarves out, some that were handmade and some that were purchased, that people were leaving there because they were inspired by what the fiber fairies were doing. So they were overwhelmed and felt very blessed by this. Since I read the article, I started following the group on Facebook. And the article has been picked up by the Associated Press and has been appearing all over the country. So they're overjoyed. They are very dedicated to their mission of spreading a lot of kindness. They have some other projects in mind that don't necessarily involve knitting or crocheting. And they've just been having a lot of fun with all of the publicity, spreading the good word about their efforts. So I'm very happy to share that with you this week. I mentioned in a podcast quite a while ago that I was using the Bitsy Baby Beanies pattern to do some charity knitting. And I ended up knitting 7 hats in all to donate to the Click for Babies effort, which is based in this area. There's one based in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And Click for Babies is all about spreading awareness of shaken baby syndrome. They use the acronym PURPLE, P-U-R-P-L-E, to do a little training and education, in particular for new parents. And they advise them about the period of purple crying, things to do and not to do when your baby seems to be crying uncontrollably. And at the end of the education, they give the parents a purple cap for their babies. So caps knitted for the project need to be at least 50% purple. And as I was knitting the Bitsy Baby Beanie, I put out a call to the knitters and crocheters in my school community. There are a number of staff members who knit and crochet and like to do charity projects, and a number of students that I've been working with as well. So in addition to my 7 hats, I received multiple donations. Some people came in and gave me hats. Others just appeared stuffed into my mailbox and stuffed through the slot in my door. And overall, I was able to collect and package up 44 hats for the charity Click for Babies. I sent them off. They've been received. And the charity thanked our school district for the donation by posting a photograph of our contribution on their website. It's a really nice thing to feel like you're part of something larger and that you're making a contribution for positive change. So often we think that making a difference involves spending a lot of money or investing a lot of time. It doesn't have to. And that's our quote this week from Morristown Fiber Fairy. Double happiness. So far in our Bulk Bins Cook-Along, which is my year-long challenge to explore the contents of the bulk bins at my local health food store, try new recipes, try new ideas and new products, and post about them online. So far, I've explored lentils in January and oats in February, and I am so incredibly grateful to all of the folks who are making contributions on the Ravelry board, sending me messages, interacting on Facebook, and cooking along, which is the whole idea for this endeavor. The winner of the drawing for a free pattern for February is Kunstknit, who is Karen from Iowa, and she won because post number 28 was selected with my random number generator. Karen, please get in contact with me through a private message on Ravelry. And I have, in addition to the possibility of a free pattern, I also have a couple of other options. So private message me and we'll chat about your prize. Thank you to everyone who has been active on the boards for our cook-along. I unsticky the threads. If you're a Ravelry member, you know what that means. But I do not lock the threads, because I want people to be able to continue to ask questions and access them. Toward the end of February, there was some very interesting haggis chatter on the oats board, and you might want to go check that out. Incredibly enlightening. In March, we are putting spices in the spotlight, and this should be a lot of fun. This is in a lot of parts of the country. This is a time when things start warming up and we really want to have a little more flavor and interest in our foods, but locally grown produce isn't widely available yet and fresh herbs aren't widely available yet. So it's a great time to turn to spices. Knowing how to use spices creatively and carefully is also an essential post-apocalyptic skill. The rise of spice popularity and the importance of spice trade had a lot to do with the fact that before refrigeration, a lot of food tasted pretty bad because it wasn't well preserved and it was going bad a lot of the time when people ate it. So salt and spices were incredibly valuable and very important to culinary traditions because they would mask off odors, they would help preserve food, they would help keep them around a little bit longer. So post-apocalyptic skill indeed. One thing I was curious about is the difference between herbs and spices. I think a lot of us use herbs and spices sort of interchangeably, and if your spice rack or spice pantry is anything like mine, you have the herbs and spices all mixed together. Technically, herbs are leafy portions of a plant, and we use the term herb to refer to dried or fresh version of the leafy parts of a plant. Spices, however, are harvested from any other type of plant, and spices are plant material. So even though salt, for example, might be an important part of your spice pantry, because it's a mineral, it's not technically a spice. Things like berries, seeds, stamens, the fruit, the buds, the roots, the bark, the bulbs of plants, usually dried or preserved in some way, constitute our spices. Some plants yield both herbs and spices. So, for example, cilantro, the leafy part, and coriander, the seed. Dill is also a plant that you can use the leafy parts as well as the seed. One thing that is important to note is that spices lose their complexity and their intensity the longer they are stored on your shelf. So periodically, it is helpful to empty out spice jars and buy new quantities, and buy spices in small quantities, or even better, if you're using a source like Penzies or some kind of great mail order source for a wide variety of spices, get together with a bunch of friends, buy larger quantities of spices, and split them up. In the next episode, I plan to report on my journey to the local health food store, which has an amazing array of herbs and spices that you can buy by weight. And there's an entire counter dedicated to that particular portion of items in the store. There are a number of things that are low in my spice pantry and things that have gone missing because I've used them all up. So I have some lists to make and some shopping to do, and I look forward to reporting back about my spice buying adventures. This week I was reviewing the Improvised Life website, and I found a really great entry about the use of reclaimed and repurposed materials to use as spice jars or spice containers. This is particularly timely because, continuing with our bulk bins cook-along, March has spices in the spotlight. So I was very pleased to find that the Improvised Life website had an entry about using different materials for spice jars, and it was also a great chance to revisit the Improvised Life Manifesto. If you've never read this manifesto, I highly recommend that you take a look, and I have linked it in the show notes, but I think it is worth reading all of the points of the manifesto here. And the website has a really great PDF, which I've printed out. I have over my desk in both of my offices at work, and it's a great thing to reflect on from time to time when you feel like things are overwhelming and you need to get back to the important stuff in life. The team of this blog has done a great job in gathering up the important bits. So here goes, the manifesto from theimprovisedlife.com. Improvising is a powerful operating principle. You don't have to be an expert to improvise. Improvising is a practice, like yoga or cooking. The more we do it, the better we get at it. Creativity can be cultivated. We can learn what we don't know. We believe in asking why not when we have an interesting idea and trying our idea out. We can be afraid to do something and do it anyway. Mistakes are often paths to unexpected solutions. Making mistakes is the way we learn. Perfection is overrated. Constraints are challenges rather than limitations, whether money, space, or materials. Making a mess is an essential part of improvising. Improvising is an antidote to limiting ideas. Improvising guides you to the solutions you are looking for. Improvising is a path full of richness and discovery. TheImprovisedLife.com. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves her down like a lady waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire, just like Linda Curtis, burnt out on a wire. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a
Thanks for listening. Music in today's episode is So Wheat. Music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Chris DeLong and Cesar Diaz. The lyrics are available on the Bovine Social Club website, and the link is provided in the show notes on yarns@yinhu.com. If you like this episode, consider joining the Yarns at Yinhu Facebook page or leaving a review or star rating on iTunes. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
Hike a country mile. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a